Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. At this time, we would like to welcome everyone to Braskem's fourth quarter and full year of 2017 earnings conference call. Today with us, we have Fernando Musa, CEO, Pedro Freitas, CFO, and Pedro Teixeira, IR and Controller Director. We would like to inform you that this event is being recorded, and all participants will be in listen-only mode during the company's presentation. After Braskem remarks are completed, there will be a question and answer section. At that time, further instructions will be given. Should any participant need assistance during this call, please press star zero to reach the operator. We have simultaneous webcast that may be accessed through Braskem's IR website at www.braskem-ri.com.br and the MZIQ platform, where the slide presentation is available for download. Please feel free to flip through the slides during the conference call. There will be a replay facility for this call on the website. We remind you that questions, which will be answered during the Q&A session, may be posted in advance on the website. Before proceeding, let me mention that forward-looking statements are being made under the safe harbor of the Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1996. Forward-looking statements are based on the beliefs and assumptions of Braskem management and on information currently available to the company. They involve risks, uncertainties, and assumptions because they relate to future events and, therefore, depend on circumstances that may or may not occur in the future. Investors should understand that general economic conditions, industry conditions, and other operating factors could also affect the future results of Braskem and could cause results to differ materially from those expressing such forward-looking statements. Now, I'll turn the conference over to Pedro Teixeira, IR and Controller Director. Mr. Teixeira, you may begin your conference.
Hello. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Braskem conference call for the year end 2017. At this time, we decided to prepare a shorter presentation with intent to deliver just the key highlights for the performance of 2017 and what we, the company, expects for the year end of 2018. So I ask you to move to slide number three, where we will begin our presentation. So slide number three, it is a summary about what we initially expected for the year of 2017 and what actually happened. So in Brazil, in terms of regional sales, the company is geographically diversified. We have operations in Brazil, U.S., Europe, and Mexico. In general, all the regions, the sales in those regions were positive. There was a growth by 4% in Brazil, 5% in U.S. and Europe, and a huge growth in Mexico, especially because in 2016, during the first semester, the project was pretty much pre-operational. So this is the reason why the increase was so relevant in Mexico. In terms of spreads, in the beginning of 2017, we expected some volatility. We expected positive spreads for basic petrochemical, and in fact, for 2017, the spreads were very much robust. I would say extraordinary, especially in the beginning of 2017. The growth against 2016 was 28%. We were a little bit more negative in the beginning of the year with respect to the spreads of resins in Brazil. But in the end, the spreads remained a little bit flat as compared to 2016. For U.S. and Europe, we were stable, but in the end, the spreads turned out to be a little bit worse than we expected in the beginning. And in Mexico, we expected a positive spread in the beginning of the year, and the spreads were, in fact, positive, especially in the end of the year where we see an appreciation of the PE prices and the ethane prices remain at stable. In terms of EBITDA, in the beginning of the year, we expected a small EBITDA for Brazilian operations, but in the end, the EBITDA turned out to be positive. There was a growth by 2% as compared to 2016. The EBITDA was relatively stable for U.S. and Europe. In fact, there was a decrease by 7%, but the absolute value remained very much robust. And there was, as expected, a relevant increase in the EBITDA from Mexico by 282% compared year over year. And on a consolidated basis, there was an increase by 17%. The company posted its record EBITDA of $3.8 billion, equivalent to 12.3 billion reais. In terms of free cash flow, there was also an increase by 9% comparing year over year. And the earnings per share were also positive. In 2016, we had a negative net income. In 2017, the net income was positive of around 4 billion reais, and this turned out in a very positive earnings per share in 2017. So moving to slide number four, this with the, we highlighted five key highlights that the company performed in 2017. So in terms of operational performance, it was a year, 2017 was a year of a record of production. So we posted a record of production of ethylene, butadiene, gasoline, polyethylene, polypropylene in Brazil, PP, in the U.S. and Europe. There were also a record of sales in the main chemicals that are produced in Brazil. PE in the Brazilian market, it was a record as well. Exports of butadiene and ethylene, and PP in U.S. and Europe. So the consolidated EBITDA, it was a record of 3.8 billion reais, 17% higher, $3.8 billion, 17% higher than in 2016. In terms of value creation, 2017 was a year where we stabilized, actually, we started up in the beginning of 2017 and we stabilized our UTEC position in U.S. Also, we concluded the investment for flexibilization of feedstock in the Bahia cracker. Now we can run half of the cracker using ethane instead of naphtha in Bahia. And this investment was completed by the end of 2017. So it was an achievement for the company in 2017. And also, the board of Braskem, the board of directors, approved the investment for the new PP plant in U.S., an investment of up to $675 million for a new PP plant and a total capacity of 450,000 tons that are expected to become operational in the first half of 2020. It was also, 2017 was a year of liability management. The company issued two bonds in the total amount of $1.7 billion. This enabled the company to refinance its short-term debt and extend the tenor of the total debt of the company. The demand for this offer exceeded eight times, and represented the largest funding transaction of the company and with the lowest cost ever made. With respect to credit rating, Braskem maintained its investment grade by rating by S&P and Fitch. So the company is BBB+ by the three by these two rating agencies. More recently, the company, the outlook that was negative from S&P was stabilized, and Braskem now was eligible by S&P to become three notches above the Brazilian sovereign. So considering the diversification in terms of geography, the diversification in terms of feedstock, the company is more detached from the Brazilian sovereign risk. And last, let's talk about dividends. We had an early distribution of a billion reais in the end of the year, and more precisely in December. This represented around 25% of the net profit of the company. So the minimum dividend was paid in the end of last year. then the company is proposing, is suggesting an additional distribution of 1.5 billion reais to be approved in the next annual shareholder meeting. So the company, all the good performance, good results of the company is being shared also with investors. So let's move to slide number five. Let's talk a little bit about the CapEx for the company, what we posted for 2017, and what we expected for the year of 2018. In 2017, we posted a CapEx of 2.3 billion reais. 1.5 billion reais is related to operational CapEx, and 823 million reais were related to those strategic projects that I have already mentioned. And this was a decrease of 31% as compared to 2016, especially because in 2016 we still had some contributions to the Mexican project that was concluded, and no additional investment or cash was required by the project in 2017. For 2018, we do expect an increase in the amount of investment in the operational side. There will be a scheduled maintenance shutdown for the cracker in Triunfo in the south of Brazil that will demand more investment for the year of 2018. And also the new plant, the new PP plant, 2018 would account for 40%, around 40% of expected investment for this project in U.S. It's 40% of $675 million that are expected to be invested in 2018. So the total investment would would increase from 2.3 to 2.9 billion reais. So let's move to slide number six, and we are sharing with all of you how the market, what in terms of spreads, what is expected for the year of 2018 as compared with 2017. It is the source of these spreads is IHS. So for 2017, the spread, the PE spread, so the difference between PE prices and naphtha prices was around $720 per ton. It is expected an increase by 3.6%. So the average increase expected by IHS for the year of 2018 will be around 740, so better spreads are expected by IHS, even considering the new capacities that are becoming operational. In fact, five new PE plants have started up until now in U.S. With a total capacity of 4.4 million tons, and two more expected to begin its operation in the second half of 2018. And also five new ethylene plants have started up until now in the U.S. and in the amount of, in the total capacity of 5.5 million tons of ethylene. So even though those capacity will start up and are starting up, the spreads, the IHS remain very positive in terms of PE spreads. The same happens for PP. The spreads should increase by 12%. That's the perception of IHS. So 2017, the average spread was $590 per ton. That's the difference of PP against NAFTA ARA. And the spread should go up to $665 per ton. Some projects were in mainly China were postponed to after 2020. And the demand growth for these projects for PE and PP remain very much robust. So let's move to our last slide, slide number seven. And here is how we see the outlook for 2018 versus 2017. Utilization rate, the company expects the utilization rate should remain stable. There is no much reason to believe that utilization rate should become much lower than 2017, even though in 2017 was a year of a record of production. In terms of demand, we see demand very positive in U.S. and Europe, and important to highlight That in Mexico, the demand should also be positive, especially in Brazil and in Mexico. And there is an elasticity in terms of the resin market, which is higher than if compared with the with the U.S. and Europe region. So we expect a growth of for the resin demand in U.S. And in Mexico and in Brazil of 1.5 times the GDP. In terms of spreads, in bottom up in Mexico, the spreads we expect to be better. International expect it is aligned with the view of IHS. U.S. and Europe, it is the same. We produce polypropylene. And in Brazil, spreads should be relatively stable. The combination of resins should be relatively stable. And the negative side that we expect for 2018 relates to chemicals. In fact, 2017, we have an extraordinary spread for chemicals. We posted very extraordinary impacts in the result of 2017 of around $300 million. And we are not expecting, at least for now, these spreads being the same for the year of 2018. So, in the end, the consolidated EBITDA for 2018 should be smaller as compared with 2017. Even though the EBITDA should be smaller, the consolidated cash flow for 2018 we expect it to be higher. In 2017, we had an important impact in terms of working capital consumption that we do not expect to happen again in 2018. So that will be a pro. In terms of interest, as a consequence of the liability management and optimization that the company made in its debt profile, we expect to have lower interest rates and gross debt for the year of 2018. This should be positive. There was U.S. tax reforms that would enable the company to reduce its income tax paid in U.S. That would be another positive. In terms of CapEx, as already mentioned, the CapEx will be higher in 2018 as compared to 2016. And it is important to note that in 2017, we paid 1.5 billion reais of around of global settlement. And for this year, we expect to pay around 300 million reais. So it's a much lower payment that will be due this year to the authorities with respect to the global settlement that was closed in 2016. So in the end, the consolidated cash flow of the company for 2018 should be higher than in 2017. We thank you very much. I will turn into the Q&A session, and thanks.
Thank you. The floor is now open for questions. If you have a question, please press star 1 on your touchdown phone at this or any time. If at any point your question has been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing the pound key. Questions will be taken in the order they are received. We do ask that when you pose your questions that you pick up your handset to provide optimal sound quality. Please hold while we poll for questions. Our first question comes from Mr. Vicente Falanga from Bank of America.
Hi, good morning, Fernando, Pedro, Rosana. Good morning, everyone. I had a couple of questions. First, on the outlook for polyethylene, the market seems to be growing more and more optimistic with the PE cycle. Some experts already mentioning the possibility of an extended up cycle throughout the next 5 years. On the other hand, I mean, one risk that we do see is the potential effects of a global trade war affecting polyethylene. In other words, Asian producers potentially retaliating tariffs imposed on steel by the U.S., you know, with tariffs on products such as polyethylene. in a scenario that this eventually happens and the U.S. has to redirect, you know, its imminent new supply from Asia to smaller regions like Latin America, for example, how do you see the region responding? Could the countries in the Mercosur articulate to rise import tariffs on PE, at least temporarily? How likely would you see this happening? And then my second question, related to the NAFTA supply contract agreement with Petrobras, there are expectations, at least from the market side, that Petrobras could revise this NAFTA supply contract with Braskem soon, you know, since it expires in a couple of years. To the best of your knowledge, and based on what you're able to share, of course, you know, are these conversations currently ongoing? And also, do you see Petrobras' intentions to sell some refineries potentially getting in the way of the volumes they want to compromise with Braskem? And then, you know, just a last comment still on that subject, if I may, sorry. Petrobras just announced that they will build a gas treatment facility in Itaboraí, Rio de Janeiro. Would the company consider adding more flexibility to its crackers on top of, you know, the potential ethane supply coming from this plant? Thank you very much.
So, Vicente, thank you for your question. I'll start with the polyethylene outlook and the question that you have. We on the view, I mean, there is in fact this optimistic view from North America or from the market in terms of the demand growth for polyethylene, and you can see that on the spread that IHS is forecasting for 2018, even with the entry of the new capacities, almost 6.5 million tons of new capacity forecasted to come in to the market in 2018, of which 3 million tons in the U.S. The industry, as reflected by IHS, is forecasting an increase in spreads on the PE to NAFTA spread, which is, I would say, a realization of the optimistic view that you mentioned. The potential effect of an eventual trade war, you have to look at it region by region. Polyethylene is a highly global commodity, and I mean, you have a very high degree of international trade in polyethylene. And Asia, China in particular, are net importers, significant net importer regions. So you have the U.S. and the Middle East exporting polyethylene, and basically Asia as the major importer. So if there's a trade war, and that can play out in many different ways, so it's hard to forecast what could happen. But let's say that global tariffs increase everywhere. So how would that affect us? I would say there are a couple of ways of how that could affect us. I mean, first, the Mexico project and the Mexico operation now would be, I'd say, positively affected. Mexico is a huge net importer of polyethylene. We are the largest local producer. So if Mexico imposes tariffs, that would actually be positive for us. And we don't export a lot. I mean, and we would direct more of the production to the internal market. So our exports from Mexico would not be materially affected, I would assume. In Brazil, which is the other region where we produce polyethylene, I mean, we follow international prices. So we would have to discuss a little bit what happens to international prices, and also the exports of polyethylene from Brazil follow international prices. So I think the more relevant discussion for what would happen to the Brazilian operation is what would happen to international prices. Hard to foresee, but as I said, Asia is a net importer, huge net importer. So if Asia imposes tariffs, it will be increasing prices in Asia, local prices, but the exporters from the U.S. or from the Middle East would probably be getting roughly the same sort of profitability. So not sure it would affect our exports from Brazil or even the domestic prices in Brazil that follow these prices. So, but again, it's a hard question to address because there are lots of moving parts. And it's a very complex system. I was going to the next question, but if you have any follow-up on this one.
No, that's perfect. Thanks.
Okay, so Petrobras NAFTA. Sorry, Fernando, I'm not sure if you want to make any comments on that.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello.
We can hear you.
Okay. Just to reinforce, I think the point Pedro just made, that at the end of the day, this is a global market, and the trade flows will adjust. The different regions have their own production and demand balance. And if there is retaliation towards PE produced in the U.S., the Middle East will need to supply Asia, especially China. And the U.S. will serve the other markets, potentially served by the Middle East. So at the end of the day, it's all about the global balance between supply and demand, which, as mentioned before in the presentation and by Pedro, seems to be going towards a positive territory with strong demand and most of the capacity additions are already starting up. Not a lot of new capacity expected for the next 2-3 years to come online. So, moving on.
Fernando, you're breaking up. So,
do you guys? Why don't you take it, and I'll find another line here.
Okay. So.
Okay.
The other question was about the Petrobras NAFTA. I mean, we have a contract that is valid until December 2020. We are operating with it. So, I mean, that's the situation now. Petrobras is rumored to be looking at refinery sales, but I mean, we are the only consumer in Brazil, so it's a discussion that we always have with Petrobras around feedstock and what are the possibilities around that. But the contracts are there. The contract is there. It expires in 2020. So I mean, it's something that in due time we'll discuss with them. And the third point
on.
The investment in the gas treatment facility in Itaboraí. We are always interested in new feedstock opportunities. We already have a gas cracker in Rio de Janeiro close to Itaboraí, so it would make sense in our view to take any available liquids from the gas processing and use those liquids to supply our facility, potentially even for an expansion of the facility, depending on the volumes available. But we would need to look at the investment that Petrobras is making and understand what are the volumes there to then start a discussion, evaluation of any project based on that. But we do see it as a positive, I would say, evolution in terms of having more feedstock available in Brazil. That would be positive for us, positive for the industry. So we have, I think, a good perspective on this investment by Petrobras.
Great. Very clear. Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Mr. Gustavo Levato from Santander.
Hi, guys. Good morning, everyone. So I have three questions here. First one is regarding the local demand year to date. So talking with other companies in different sectors, the companies are mentioned that demand has been lower than initially expected. So how the companies is seeing the rising demand for local market in the first quarter? Has it been strong or a little bit slower than initial expectations? The second question is regarding the Mexico project. So there is a delivery pay for Pemex regarding the ethane supply there. So when will it impact the operating results since the company, since Pemex supplied less ethane than was first saw in the contract? And the third and last question is regarding the Nafta supply contract. When it was signed in 2015, if I'm not wrong, the Nafta price was around $400 per ton. Now it's around above $600 per ton. So at the time, the contract had a clause mentioned that in case of further increase in raw materials, the reference price could be reviewed. So I would like to know if you could share with us if you are in the level that the 102.1% is the price that Braskem is still paying, or since NAFTA price went up, Braskem is paying a little bit less than this reference. Thank you.
So, Gustavo, thank you for the question. Starting from demand growth, we are seeing a sustained recovery in demand. Last year, demand growth, as Pedro mentioned, was around 4%. We are expecting for this year, looking at the results already of the first quarter, around 4% demand growth again for PE, PP, TVC. I'd say strong demand from consumption. The auto industry is recovering as well. White goods, electronics as well. And then agriculture demand and demand for agricultural application has been especially good. The sector that is still lagging a little bit is construction in general, which already is showing some aspects of growth. PVC now is already slightly positive growth in the market, but it's still in a lower growth level than the other polymers that we have. In terms of the Mexico DOP, in 2017, we had a revenue of $19.5 million. So that was the accrued revenue, and we did have we already received or settled a portion of that. So the cash flow is on the delivery pay is happening in Mexico. So the contract is working as expected in terms of the protection to Braskem and Idesa in terms of the operating results of the JV. The other I think positive aspect is that even though we are not receiving all the feedstock that we had expected at first, the operating rate is pretty good at 88% on average, and also the EBITDA margins are above 50%, so actually 55% for the average of the year and 60% in the fourth quarter. So again, very good results, even though we're not receiving all the volumes that we had expected. Fernando, if you have any comments on either Brazilian demand or Mexico, otherwise I'll take the other question on the contract, the NAFTA contract.
No, it was very clear.
So just Gustavo, you asked about also the contract. NAFTA was at, as you said, around $400 per ton back in 2015. Now it's at $600 per ton, or $550 is the expected for the current price, I would say. But anyway, it is a higher level. We think that the contract is operating well for us, and we do have that fixed price. Conceptually, we think that a more, let's say, flexible pricing formula would be better for the industry. So a pricing formula that had more a variation depending on the level of oil or naphtha prices would be better for Braskem. But the current contract is actually working well, so it has generated the results that we've seen. I think the point to look at is less on the naphtha price level and more on the spread level. And the spreads have been pretty good, given the point in the cycle that we are at. So, and that's what gives us the results that we have.
Okay,
Pedro. This is Fernando. Just to reinforce this, the relevant indicator is the spread. As Pedro mentioned, flexibility in the contract would be a welcome, especially given the fact that at high oil prices, there is a tendency for the naphtha to the product, the polymer spread, to compress. And at low oil prices, there's a tendency for the spread to open up. So the competitiveness of the whole petrochemical chain fluctuates with the that is naphtha base fluctuates with the oil price, and therefore, if there were some flexibility in the contracting as we had in previous contracts, it would make it at these extremes, high or low oil prices, more competitive. At the current price level, 400 to 550, 600, that we've been experiencing, the current formula works, given that the volatility in the spreads and the competitiveness between the naphtha based and the light fees based is not fluctuating as much.
Okay, very clear. Thank you, guys.
Our next question comes from Mr. Luis Carvalho from UBS.
Hey, guys, thanks. I have three questions as well. Fernando, maybe if I can touch on the NAFTA country on a different angle. Is this negotiation happening from the management level? I mean, Braskem with Petrobras, or it's happening more in the controlling shareholders agreement between Odebrecht and Petrobras? Just to understand where we are in terms of negotiations so far. And that's the first question. The second question, it's regarding the Pemex supply. If is there any update regarding the diversification there in terms of the a potential pipeline bringing gas from U.S. or something that you can share with us in order to look at a bit more longer term supply if Pemex is not able to fulfill the full contract. And third question, it's related to dividends. And in this year, we saw, if I'm not wrong, 60% payout. According to your presentation, you expect in 2018 a lower EBITDA level but a higher free cash flow. So I just would like to understand how do you see or what's the management, way of thinking regarding the dividend payment for 2018. Thank you.
Okay, on NAFTA contract, all feedstock contracts are negotiated, managed, dealt with by management with suppliers, all suppliers, including Petrobras. So this is management responsibility, not shareholder responsibility, to guarantee the adequate supply of feedstock for our operations, and our teams around the world deal with the different suppliers. There's been a lot of talk about the NAFTA contract,
because of the announcements of potential changes in governance that were made and confirmed by Petrobras, confirmed by Odebrecht. But dealing with its stock suppliers is a management responsibility and not a shareholder's responsibility. On Pemex supply, Pemex is already working around the alternatives to guarantee the supply that they committed under the contract. They have started to import ethane from the U.S. Into Mexico to help increase the flow for the petrochemical industry in Mexico. We see this as a good initiative by Pemex. Many companies around the world are doing that activity of moving ethane around the world, including Braskem, which we started late November. So this is something that we see a very positive as a way to, in combination with the efforts that Pemex is doing at the production side and fractionation side of its systems in Mexico, it creates a risk mitigator for the supply, which is it's good from our point of view. As far as the dividends that could be paid out early 19 from the 18 results, and this is a decision that will be made at the end of the year. But as we mentioned, we in the presentation, our expectation is of a strong cash flow generation. We have an increase in CapEx, but a reduction in the payouts coming from the global settlements that the company signed in December 16. So this should lead to a discussion that we'll have at the end of the year once we have more clarity on expectations for 19 and 20 that as of today seems to be improving. This will lead to a decision that if you look at the past few years, our payout ratio has been in this 50 to 60% of net income ratio. So we'll make that decision by the end of the year, but the underlying expectation of results leads to a strong cash flow and therefore a decent payout for next year as well.
Okay, and
Pedro,
go ahead, sorry.
Go ahead. I was going to ask if Pedro wants to add anything on the dividend question.
No, I think that's it.
Yeah, and just a quick follow-up on this one, more and taking the opportunity that you're both on the call, related to the capital allocation. I mean, this high payout with a high, cash flow, and how do you see potential acquisitions or for the projects on the way? Meaning you already made a significant large project, which is the SMN-21. You're now with a project of PP in U.S., but how can we think looking forward in terms of the capital allocation when you look to the cycle, right? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the question. This is something that now that the Mexico investment is behind us as far as cash needs, and we're in full steam ahead with the new PP plant in the U.S., we do anticipate that new opportunities will come to the company, be it new projects, new construction, or acquisitions. We have always looked at those opportunities. Nothing interesting came up besides the PP plant that was approved last year. But this is constantly being analyzed. We have a very disciplined process to look through our strategy and the positioning we have in the different regions and businesses where we are operating. We'll continue to look for that. Acquisition route is one where the very strong results has been leading to high valuations in our point of view for a cyclical industry. And I think the new expectations around a positive cycle going forward might lead to tougher negotiations around any potential acquisition. Having said that, if the right asset or company comes up for sale, we'll certainly look at those, given our very strong track record of making the acquisitions in a very successful way for Braskem shareholders, generating a lot of value from the acquisitions made over the years. So it is part of our plan, and will certainly be, as I mentioned, part of the decision-making in the back end of the year, early 19, around dividends, is going to be this potential new projects will come into the equation when we make any decisions about dividends for the upcoming years.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much.
Just a compliment there, Fernando. The discussion around dividend payout and also on investment always goes also through the discussion about leverage. So we always consider the company's ability to leverage and limits to leverage so that we don't overextend ourselves. So that's also part of the considerations that we always have whenever we're discussing this balance between new investments and dividend payout.
Clear. Thank you. Thank you, Pedro. Thank you, Fernando.
Our next question comes from Mr. Hassan Ahmed from Alembic Global.
Morning, gents. A two-part question. One about the near term and one about the longer term. On the nearer term side of things, you talked about compressing EBITDA year on year in 2018. Just a bit confused about that, because as I take a look at the fundamentals, clearly Brent crude is up $15 a barrel relative to 2017 averages. So at least in my mind, that should equate to a 7 to 8 cent a pound tailwind in the price of ethylene polyethylene. And we're obviously seeing that, particularly in the U.S. market, where pricing, contract pricing has gone up. So on the ethylene polyethylene side, and you also obviously alluded to sort of expanding spreads year on year. Then we're obviously in the near term entering a pretty heavy turnaround season. Particularly in Europe, I think April alone, there are 5 ethylene crackers that are going to be turned around. Then I take a look at the polypropylene dynamics near term. Supply demand continues to get tighter. So I'd imagine polypropylene margins will be up year on year as well. And finally, you have chlorovinyls, where the fundamentals look extremely attractive. So the near-term question really is, why do you feel that you will see compressing EBITDA, in 2018 relative to 2017? So that's the near-term side. On the longer-term side, we, post-2018, were entering a capacity addition vacuum period. So the handful of companies that had already announced some incremental capacity, it seems even they now are backing off. Meaning the other day, Chevron came out with an announcement that they were reconsidering, the next gen cracker on the back of higher capital costs, obviously higher steel prices, higher energy prices and the like. So longer term, I'd love to hear your view. I mean, are we basically going to see a tight side, what was going to be a pretty tight environment, even get tighter? So that's kind of my two-part thing about the near and long term.
Hello, Hassan. Thanks for the questions. On the short term, I think there's a couple of factors that need to be inputted here in the discussion. First, Braskem is much larger than PE. So if you look at the crackers' profitability, especially the naphtha crackers in Brazil, In the first half of the year in 2017, the co-products had very, very strong price increases that led to significant profitability in our operations thanks to that. The expectation is that those co-product price increases will not happen this year. We didn't see it last year. It happened in the first quarter. We didn't see it happening this year, and this should put more pressure on the overall basic chemical spreads. Second, even though the scenario for PE is one where the spread should be healthy, it's important to remind ourselves that there is a lot of new production coming online in the U.S. Some of it will target South America, so we do expect increased competition in the region, which should lead to a tempering of this spread increase, translating into concrete margin increase for us. So we probably will see more competition from the U.S.-based production in South America, which will be counterbalanced by the better spreads in general, as mentioned before, and the net-net combined with chemicals, in our point of view right now, is that this should lead to a decrease. Two other extraordinary factors that are important to factor in is we did have a positive EBIT contribution from the acquisition of Quantic last year. It will not repeat itself. The divestment of Quantic. And the in Brazil, there is a tax incentive, the REIQ, which has a lower rate in 18 compared to 17. So the impact of it to our profitability will be reduced as well. So when you put all this into the equation, it leads to our expectation of declining EBITDA for the short term. Having said that, if the optimism that we're seeing in the industry around PE and PP really goes to a very positive scenario, this could lead us to being closer to last year's results if those spreads really stay strong or get even stronger than currently anticipated for the back end of the year. On the midterm, I think at the end of the day, when demand is perceived to be very strong over the next few years, this will lead to investment. If CapEx becomes even more expensive in the U.S., as it had become over the last 4 to 6 years, I think the fact that people have mastered the ability to move DFN around the world could create the ability of investments being made in other regions with ethane flowing from the U.S. Towards that. So we already start to hear news of ethane crackers being built in China with imported ethane, and the capital intensity in China is significantly lower than what you see in the U.S. Gulf Coast. So either the CapEx cost in the U.S. will go to back to a more reasonable level, and the products, the projects will be built in the U.S., or when projects will be built in China, India, or other places where capital intensity is lower, and the feedstock will flow as the industry master the ability to move ethane around the world. So my expectation is we might have an extended positive cycle, but eventually projects will be needed, product will be needed, and I mean, projects will be built to deal with this.
Very helpful. Very helpful. Now a boring follow-up, if I may. You know, I was taking a look at your consolidated EBITDA, and you know, there seems to be a 182 million Brazilian real drag to EBITDA in the quarter. And it seems that, you know, it was under the eliminations and reclassifications line. And it seems for the last couple of quarters, there has been a negative drag as that line item. And that drag prior to, call it, 2 to 3 quarters was not there. So just trying to understand what that drag is.
Pedro, do you want to take this?
Is more of so Hassan, what we've been doing is we have on the segments, because we export from Brazil to Europe and to the U.S. a little bit, but more to Europe, we are adding the profitability of those exports or the margin of those exports to both businesses, to the Brazil segment and to the Europe segment. And then we eliminate that on the consolidation so that we don't have a double count on the consolidated results. So that's the main reason for that.
Got it. Okay, very helpful. Thanks so much, guys.
Our next question comes from Mrs. Fernanda Cunha from Citibank.
Hi, good morning, everyone. I have two follow-up questions. So my first one is regarding Mexico project. Given that Pemex production, ethane production is dropping, and I understand they're importing from the U.S., but can you give us a guidance of what would be a reasonable utilization rate of that project for this year? And also, I understand that this quarter you were reimbursed for the difference in the utilization rate for the second quarter of 2017, given that Pemex did not deliver the 100% supply of ethane. I'm just trying to do a back of the envelope math here, and I'm trying to understand whether you're going to be reimbursed for only the ethane cost, or are you actually going to be reimbursed from the margin from not producing the PE? So those are my two questions regarding the Mexico project. And my last one is on dividends. What is the reasonable leverage ratio? What is your target leverage ratio going forward? I'm just trying to understand if it's reasonable to think that your dividend payout going forward could be close to free cash flow firm as it was this quarter. Sorry, as it was this year. Thank you.
Okay. Good morning, Fernanda. On Mexico, our expectation is to be running anywhere between 85 to 90%, depending on availability of supply from Pemex. As far as the penalties, the deliver or pay penalties, they partially offset the margin. They do not compensate for the full margin, and the structure of the contract is not linked to a margin compensation. And as far as leverage, the dialogue with the board is to have 2.5 as a top number for leverage. We could eventually go a little bit above that in the case of a relevant acquisition, if it makes sense. But this would happen if we had very strong synergies expectations that would quickly bring us back below 2.5. Pedro, I don't know if you want to add anything on the three topics.
Just to reinforce that this leverage of 2.5 is a ceiling reference. It's not anywhere close to where we are right now. We are roughly 1.9. And even with dividend payments, we will get maybe closer to 2, but nowhere close to 2.5.
And I would also add, Fernanda, that this penalty, it partially offset the margin, especially because now the ethane price is very low. It's close to $200 per ton, and in a situation where the ethane price goes up, of course, the margin will be more compensated by this deliver pay penalty.
Okay, I see. So you basically you have a range of how much you would be compensated for the methane, not supplied by Pemex, right?
Yeah, we don't provide the exactly percentage, but it's a percentage over the ethane price. So if the ethane price is higher, the absolute value of the compensation will be higher as well. That's the rationale behind it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Mrs. Sarah Leshner from Barclays.
Hi, thanks very much for taking my questions. So most of what I wanted to ask has been answered, but I just have one small question remaining, which is whether you are aware of negotiations continuing or not continuing between your shareholders, in particular as it relates to Petrobras' stated interest in divesting its stake. Thanks.
So the information I have is that the dialogue between Petrobras and Odebrecht is ongoing. As I mentioned in previous calls, we're not directly part of it. This is a discussion between the shareholders. As of today, I have not been informed of either concrete progress or the stop of the conversations. So I would say the dialogue is still happening between the shareholders, given the fact that I did not receive any information to the contrary.
Perfect. And I just have one very, very small confirmation. So I recall that for 2018, the guidance for utilization of it at New Mexico operations was 90%, and you came in right around 90% at the 88%. But you mentioned that for 2019 it was 85 to 90%. So I'm just wondering, is it your intention that those numbers should be considered flat, like we should expect to see relatively similar utilization from 2018 to 19, or is it a deliberate change in your guidance from 90% in 2018 to a lower range in 2019?
I would say, and given all the actions that Pemex is taking, including the start of import of ethane, our expectation is to have similar type of performance on the Pemex side. So that's why we have this range of 85 to 90. We fluctuated during the year and ended the year at 88 on average for the year. This is a range for where we expect. It will depend a lot on way more on Pemex performance and the amount of imports that they will be doing. They tested their system for the imports in over the last month and a half, and it's going to be now their decision to increase that import rate or not, based on how well the production side and the midstream side of their systems operates. They have the reserves, they have the capabilities to produce more ethane locally. Let's see how they manage the system overall and how much imports they will bring.
Okay, thank you. That's perfect.
Our next question comes from Mr. Vicente Falanga from Bank of America.
Thank you for taking one more question. It will be a quick one, I promise. Could you remind us what is Braskem's NAFTA importing capacity to Brazil today in a smooth way without having to take any supply timing risks? And if you were to import your NAFTA, would you likely get similar pricing conditions as a contract that you have with Petrobras? Thank you.
So today we already import a significant part of our demand of NAFTA in Brazil. We have the ability to import a little more than we're currently importing. A large part of the infrastructure for the NAFTA import is in Petrobras' hands and control. So this is part of our daily dialogue from an operational point of view with Petrobras to facilitate our imports. of NAFTA. As far as price is concerned, it varies along the year depending on the supplier, the quality of the NAFTA. NAFTA has different types of NAFTA, and depending on the olefins and aromatics contents of different NAFTAs, it could yield to different pricing. I would say in the scenario we've been living over the last few months, we end up with pretty similar price points for the NAFTA between the imported NAFTA and the Petrobras contract, with the NAFTA fluctuating in the $500 to $600 per ton range, given the fact that our Petrobras contract is a percentage of the reference, and some of the other landed costs would be more in reference plus a fixed amount, typically related to freight. So today, as I said, we're pretty close to 50-50 our imports compared to the NAFTA contract with Petrobras, and we could import a little bit more depending on the access to logistics, but and the contract with Petrobras, I mean the local supply makes a lot of sense for them to serve us and for us to buy from them to facilitate logistics.
Great, thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Mr. Pedro Medeiros from Citigroup.
Okay, good morning, guys. Thank you so much for taking this last question. I apologize if this was somehow already answered on the call. I had some connection issues. But do you mind to comment on the maturity of your supply contract for ethane with Petrobras today, how it's currently working, and whether there could be any negotiations on that side? And as a follow-up to that, in light of the risking in the outlook for availability for ethane, with Petrobras now confirming the construction to expand fractionation capacity and that to start by 2020, what are the conditions required for you to consider an expansion in Rio Pol? And when should we be discussing this topic as a part of the investment in Braskem? Okay, thank you.
So the ethane supply with Petrobras expires, the current contract goes to 2021, so it expires after the NAFTA contract. As mentioned before, the dialogue with Petrobras and all suppliers of feedstock is a constant dialogue. As we get closer to the end of the most relevant contracts like the NAFTA contract or the ethane propane supply for the Rio de Janeiro cracker, we will start the dialogue. We have more than three years for the ethane and propane supply in Rio de Janeiro. So when is the right time, this dialogue will happen with Petrobras. As far as additional feedstock for a potential expansion of the Rio de Janeiro cracker, this is something that we have been evaluating for quite a long time. It's going to be dependent on the development of the pre-salt reserves first, and second, the midstream infrastructure, the fractionation and separation units. There are multiple players now. It goes beyond Petrobras, and all those players are making their investment decisions and their investment evaluations. As this progress, we will have more clarity from their end on future availability, and we will certainly engage with both Petrobras and the other players around additional feedstock for our complex in Rio de Janeiro, where we do have an opportunity at a very competitive CapEx to basically double capacity there. But I mean, the big question is around the feedstock availability, which depends on not only the midstream but also the the production wells development by Petrobras and the other players in pre-salt.
Okay, thank you so much.
I'll turn over the to the company for closing remarks.
Okay, so thank you very much for all the questions and the attention. As discussed in the presentation and during the questions session, 2017 was a very strong year for Braskem. We had very positive operational results and from a production point of view, from a commercial point of view around the world with several production records that we delivered. We also had a set of important value-adding projects, either starting or being completed, be it the UTAC new plant that started early in the year, the approval of the PP plant construction in the U.S., and the conclusion of the ethane flexibility for the Bahia cracker, which will help us continue our drive to making Braskem a very competitive company going forward. On the financial side, three highlights. I mean, the liability management with the $1.75 million raised in the two bonds with a very competitive cost and really helping on the liability management and helping us push the maturity of the debt and reducing the amount of debt we need to repay over the next 2-3 years. The rating agencies looking at us and seeing all these positive results and therefore maintaining our investment grade by two of them, despite the downgrade that Brazil has been suffering, I think it's a clear indication that the rating agencies and the market in general is finally perceiving that Braskem is not a Brazil story. It's a global story. The company, even though it still has a strong base of its business in Brazil, now really has a global footprint and is more exposed to the overall global economy with a bias towards the Americas side, but it's less dependent on Brazil, as clearly the rating being so much above the Brazil rating demonstrates. And finally, the dividend payout, the 1.5 billion reais on top of the 1 billion that we paid out late last year, I think is another indication of the confidence that the management and the board has on the solid results that we expect over the next few years, and our ability to continue to find good investment opportunities while returning value to our shareholders in the process. So once again, thank you very much, and looking forward to talking to all of you in month and a half when we will publish the first quarter results. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. This concludes today's Braskem's earnings conference call. You may disconnect your lines at this time.